present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Gloucestershire Echo, read by Corrie Caulfield.
Parents and guardians are being invited to a new Gloucestershire support group to help those who have children confronting gender issues. The group arranges outings once a month.
Our thanks to Mick Brunt for kicking off the series with that insinuation. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Susan Kalman. And opposite them, on my left, comedian and actor Cariad Lloyd and Times columnist and Conservative peer Danny Finkelstein. Jeremy, who's releasing their papers in response to some papers?
Everybody is publishing their tax returns. Try getting a book of short stories away and Random House don't want to know. Because WH Smith and Waterstones are filling up with politicians' incomes. But if that drives Jeremy Clarkson's detoxing for bigots from the shelves or means that Smiths are stocking fewer copies of Davina McCall's How to Have a Flat Stomach and No Other Qualities, then so be it. What this has shown up is that people are far less concerned generally about tax avoidance than they have been about benefit fraud, which is a minor problem by comparison. We lose billions and billions in tax avoidance, but the animus of the public is directed towards the little people. And the public are far more hateful towards people who have even less money than them but are getting a little bit that they shouldn't get through some sort of fiddle. And if you put BBC One on in the morning and leave it on, it's a sort of rolling programme that's all the same for hours on end. And every programme has the same structure and the same voiceover, so it's like one show that slightly changes theme. It starts with people who've moved to a cul-de-sac in the suburbs of Adelaide that's very similar to the cul-de-sac in Peterborough that they left behind and only moved to destroy their children's social lives and abandon their devastated ageing parents. Then it moves on to people who fell in some water but got out okay. And then you get people who are skint and not very clever, who fiddled a bit of money off the benefits or off of an insurance company. And the bloke goes, "This stupid sod claimed he was unfit for work after being flattened by a steamroller, but 6 months later, investigators found him working part-time as a bookmark. Now he's in prison and his kids are starving." But the thing is, the other reason the rich get away with it is because it's so boring what they do. Cameron tried to explain his father's thing, and you just lost interest. He's like, "I can't even be bothered to be angry about this. It's so..." So, well, my father was dealing in securities, the dollar securities, and so... That is the problem.
Is this...
The problem is, as I can see it, it's the discussion which happens often about what's illegal and what's immoral. Because there's things we would all like to be illegal that are actually kind of immoral. For example, I would like it to be illegal for parents to allow their children to watch Peppa Pig on the train on an iPad without using headphones. The problem is, I remember when I was at university and I was learning about tax law, we were told about this 7-year issue to avoid inheritance tax, and it's something that's been happening for years. And David Cameron has announced, or the government has announced, that there's going to be some form of task force that's going to look really closely, honestly, really, like, really closely, over the next decade or 20 or so decades, about this particular issue. Combined with the EU, who are also suggesting that perhaps we should be looking into it. Now, the problem, as I see it, is we've known about this for years. It's been happening for years. People keep talking about the fact they're going to do something about it for years, and then nothing ever happens. And so it'll go away, and then in about 2 or 3 years, something else will happen, and we'll find out that people have been giving their money, and nothing will change, because the people who are in power are people with money who don't want it to change. So until the people rise up like the Icelandic people did, and kudos to them for throwing bananas at the parliament. Well done, Iceland. Nothing's going to change. So the problem is, Miles, nothing's going to change.
I thought you were going to call for a revolution there, but you stopped short.
Look, I've just started a pension. So, I'm a fan of a minor revolution, but not one that affects my pension.
Is a revolution the answer?
I don't think so. The thing that I enjoyed
well,
most
don't be so
about
dismissive. It might be a good idea. There's been lots of fun revolutions over the years, Danny.
The thing that I enjoyed most about the tax revelations were all the little details, like the Chancellor of the Exchequer only earning £3 from his interest, which you'd hope he'd be able to do a bit better than that. My other favourite thing was Jeremy Corbyn's £500 for filling out surveys. So we basically found out why it was the opinion pollsters thought Labour was going to win the election. They were doing it online, and in fact, they were just getting Jeremy Corbyn sticking Labour.
And has there been panic? I mean, you're closely involved with
no, there's nothing.
I was going to say Sinister Forces, the Conservative Party. You're closely involved with the Conservative important people. Has there been a sense of panic about this?
Not Why really, this because the thing is that once you're in government, you actually can't have very many outside interests, so your tax returns are going to be boring. So therefore, the tax, it's only the issue of privacy has caused a bit of stir and a concern because people don't like it. But
no,
I don't think it's caused a real
surely you can have a vast and substantial property portfolio.
Yeah, you can.
Surely that's the... We're not talking about having a second job at Lidl.
Jeremy Corbyn does have a second job at Lidl.
Can anyone explain to me, though, what offshore is? Why didn't they just say abroad? I don't understand. You don't say I've got an offshore holiday, do you?
It's a phrase that's loaded so you know what it means. Right. So it's not like I've got a bank account in France. I don't, in case if the tax man's listening. It's always the tax man, isn't it? It's always the tax man.
Tax person.
Yeah.
Mind you, if they want to... No one likes the tax man, so men can keep her.
Yeah, that's fine. That's true.
I just like the storybook nature of it all. Because, like you said, it's so terrifying. It's so... Unbelievable. Even the company Mossack Fonseca, which sounds made up. Like, Panama Papers sounds like a Graham Greene novel. Mossack Fonseca sounds like an Albanian Eurovision winner. Like...
Mossack Fonseca sounds like... You know when you're asked to do your porn name?
Yeah.
By your weird solicitor.
Yeah. You know, what's your porn name? It's Mossack Fonseca.
What is your...
Isn't it supposed to be...
It's your name of your first pet and your mother's maiden name.
So mine would be Bart Wilkie.
What's yours? Danny?
Honey Wiener.
Honey Wiener.
Oh, it's just that about sounds perfect. Like a pet name, really. Oh.
Well, I think the whole theory was developed just for my name, actually. Yeah.
Mine would be Andrew Stagg.
I think it gives
Andrew.
A sense. Stags, they rut, you get a sense of your sort of mounting
anger.
Your first
pet was called Andrew.
He was a mouse.
That is a tough household.
It was the 60s, we had fewer names in those days.
No, I shouldn't be going. I had no idea what anyone was talking about.
What's yours, Miles?
Mine would be... we had three pets when I was first born, so I'd be one of Oscar, Max or Bramble. I think Bramble.
Bramble, we'll take Bramble.
That's quite porny. Bramble Teb. I'd be a sort of
That's
porn...
That's posh porn.
Sort of porn. Yeah. pretty happy with that.
I've come round to trap some of your guinea fowl. Bramble Teb, stop it, Bramble! Stop it!
Idiosyncratically, this is the tale of the Panama Papers and the subsequent rush by party leaders to declare details of their finances in a move somewhat reminiscent of locking a stable door after the horse has already galloped off to enjoy 30 years of sun-drenched tax-efficient luxury. A lot of people have been criticised for their tax arrangements, but we're told that we shouldn't blame individuals, we should blame the system. One, I believe, of the less successful lines of defence at the Nuremberg trials of 1945. Jeremy Corbyn published his tax return, which was just a crumpled piece of paper that says, "Everything I own, I bequeath to the workers." Apart from his MP's salary, Jeremy Corbyn's other taxable income included £1,850 from lecturing and a couple of hundred roubles for something termed Operation Beige Disaster. Fortunately, David Cameron has now launched a task force to investigate the whole thing, and we expect big results. Let me put it this way. When Mrs. Thatcher launched a task force, she came back with the Falklands. All I'm saying is, David, the bar has been set. 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, who has officially been called names?
This is the incredible excitement surrounding the EU referendum. They officially announced this week who were the official campaign groups for the In and Out campaign. So Vote Leave is the official one for the leaving, and Britain Stronger in Europe is the official campaign to stay in. Both absolutely horrific names. They're not exactly catchy. I can't see anyone wearing a banner with one of them. It should be called Europe Sucks or It's Just Easier to Stay In.
It sounds like the sort of name whenever they ring anyone to sort of like lobby and say, we suggest that you vote our way, they'll have to keep explaining what the name is to get. No, that's actually what it's called. I know it sounds like it's got... No, that is its name. Yes.
Britain Stronger. They should at least have called it Britain Remain in Europe and then it would be Brie. The Grassroots Out Challenge, the LGBT organisation run by Nigel Farage. It says they're going to challenge this because they wanted to be the official campaign, with the tantalising prospect of a challenge actually delaying the European referendum. So, fingers crossed. The point is, if you're an official campaign, you get to spend £7 million, you get a bit of public money. Now, it started rather strangely this week with kind of leaflet wars. The government are spending £9 million sending everyone a leaflet about how great Europe is, led to a huge fight in Parliament. And Nigel Evans said that David Cameron was like a spiv Robert Mugabe, which is a tremendous image. And then this week, of course, we had, if you've seen the papers, David Cameron, Neil Kinnock and Paddy Ashdown on a phone bank, phoning people. It's an extraordinary picture of the three of them. It's the worst game of kiss, cuddle and torture you've ever seen.
Peter Bone popped up on the telly. He's one of the grassroots out. Yeah, the ones in the green ties. And I thought, he seems quite a chirpy, amiable type of a bloke. I wonder what he's like. And I Googled Peter Bone, backbench Tory MP, and it came to Political Views. And basically it said he has been against all social progress that has ever happened in the history of humankind.
But he's also in favour of those ties, which I think is an even stronger reason to be against them. So those ties, they're luminous green and black stripes, which you basically only wear if you're over 50, if you're a man, and also if you're more concerned to express your view on Europe than you are with either your dignity or your taste.
So they've been revealed who the official campaigns are. Anyone else know what's been revealed this week to do with the campaigns? The campaign mascots have been unveiled this week.
Yep. They got mascots.
Which side is Pugsy on? Sorry,
they've got two campaign mascots who are called Hatred and Indifference.
Laura Koonsberg's a rather vengeful person, isn't she? I saw Corbyn's speech, and he sort of, obviously he's been in two minds about this, and he's come down on the side of Stay In. And she's piped up and went, so, Mr. Corbyn, you appear to have changed your mind, don't you? And he said, yes, I have, yeah. So, you're going to stay in now, are you? Yeah, I'm going to stay in now. But you've been critical. Yes, I have.
Once again, you totally nailed that Scottish accent.
Darling, it's Radio 4. They really won't know the difference.
Thank God someone said it.
It's true, I got a tweet once from someone listening to the news quiz saying it was delightful to hear a working class accent on Radio 4.
That's you, Miles. Yeah. you can tell those vowels are new money, you really can.
It is strange.
They're not an old family, the Jobs, I think they're trade.
It is strange, the Corbyn thing, though, like someone... I mean, we all did stuff in the 70s that we don't do now, I think. I mean, I was being breastfed for 4 months. Like to think I've changed. Wildly, this is the Electoral Commission's decision on which campaigns will enjoy, and I use that word in the most misleading of senses, official status in the EU referendum. The case for staying in will be represented by Britain Stronger in Europe, while the case for getting out will be represented by the Vote Leave campaign, beating off heavy competition from Leave.eu and the surprisingly popular Leavey McLeave face. Also this week, there are objections to the government spending £9 million on a leaflet setting out the case for staying in Europe. I haven't read it myself, but then anything that isn't a pizza delivery menu goes straight over the fence into the neighbour's garden anyway. Just in case you're wondering, I'm voting Hawaiian. 2 points to Susan. Carriad, who's taken a bit of a beating over a past relationship?
Yes, this is John Whittingdale, the culture secretary. It was recently revealed that he had a relationship with a sex worker in 2013, so a while ago. He didn't know she was a sex worker, which I think is interesting, because what did she say she did? She says she worked in Boots, W.H. Smith. What was the lie you go for?
I think she did work in Boots. Oh, she did.
And the four papers knew about this story and didn't publish it. And very sweetly, they all came out and said, we didn't think it was of public interest. So, yeah, it's a sort of... There is conspiracy theories about why perhaps they didn't publish this story, especially with the Leveson inquiry and the press regulations coming out. It's very interesting that they didn't publish the information they had on John Whittingdale.
Mate, he realised she was a sex worker when he got the bill.
It's an interesting week press-wise, of course, because there is the celebrity super injunction, which is also kicking about at this precise moment in time, and the super injunction doesn't apply in Scotland, so I can tell you.
Can you?
And then I can go home and see if they can extradite me. At the same time, you've got papers saying we are not going to publish John Whittingdale because it's not in the public interest, but are spending tens of thousands of pounds trying to beat a super injunction about a threesome that a celebrity had. And they don't match up.
Now, Danny, you're a man of the press, and you've presumably encountered Whittingdale. I assume you haven't dated, but where do you stand on this?
Well, actually, I'm basically in favour of printing all sorts of things that other people would regard as outside the limits, because I think that actually the area of public interest is quite wide. So I take probably the same view of the Whittingdale affair as I would of the super injunction issue as well. And the problem with that story, with the Whittingdale story, is I just don't know what the other papers had, because someone was trying to sell it to them for quite a lot of money, and they may have decided it wasn't worth the money that the person was asking for it.
So it's straight commercial.
So I just
decision.
Don't know why they decided not to publish it. You can speculate in the way that you have, but you just don't know.
It was a dominatrix, wasn't it? I mean, what is it, Danny, about pain that we find so pleasurable?
The funniest thing is that she was a sex worker, and she basically gave him up after 6 months when she found out she was going out with a government minister.
I think there is something very, very Tory about it, to have sex with a sex worker but not even pay them a decent wage. Well, I mean, fair play to him if he wants to go out with a sex worker. I think that's fine. But he said, never asked her what she did for a living. Think, what, in all that time? Surely you'd say, what? Is it secret work for the government that I'm not allowed to know about? Or are you some kind of superhero? You'd ask, wouldn't you?
Maybe he couldn't believe his luck, and so he thought, I'm just not going to question this relationship because it's so good and she's so amazing in bed.
Yeah,
I'm not going to say anything.
You sometimes don't want to ruin it if you're going out with someone really attractive, like by speaking. You don't want to.
Maybe he couldn't ask questions because of the gag.
Because people say, oh, well, you know, he's capable of being objective, that one thing doesn't need to... But, I mean, I'd have thought visiting a dominatrix would presumably sort of cloud your ability to do your work, whatever your work is. If you sort of turn up to meetings and your ears are just ringing with the sound of beating, or when everyone else was talking to you, you can't concentrate, you think, I just need a cold surface to put my arse against, quite frankly. Is that a professional state to turn up to work in?
He might have thought she worked in a G4S run detention centre.
I think maybe he thought she was a government whip.
Illuminatingly, this is the story of Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, John Whittingdale. Labour are calling for him to lose his powers to oversee the press after it was revealed that newspapers had for 2 years covered up his relationship with a professional dominatrix. Whittingdale told Newsnight that he did not know the woman was a dominatrix, and when he found out, he broke it off. No need to go that far, John. Just pop it back in your pants and have a think. We do need to be very careful what we say, given that John Whittingdale is supervising charter renewal and the entire future of the BBC. Hurt me, give it to me harder, I've been a bad boy. Commented a submissive director general during the latest round of negotiations. 2 points to Carriad. Danny, who's steeling themselves to come to the rescue?
Well, Tata want to sell their steel interests in Port Talbot, and the government's been trying to find a buyer, and they have intervened to stop the closure, and they're trying to find a buyer. They're also trying to stop the EU from raising tariffs on steel, which they claim would put £4.80 on the bill that households pay for shoes, because the duty rule that keeps steel cheap also keeps shoes cheap, but it means we import a lot of steel and can't sell ours. So it's basically bad news for Wales, but good news for Imelda Marcos.
So what did Tata sell the Scunthorpe plant for?
Pound.
Single pound.
I'm quite relieved because I've got to go to Scunthorpe to do a gig, and I don't want a lot of redundant steelworkers stripping on the stage when I'm trying to do my humorous side swipes at politics. But yeah, a group called Greyball bought it for £1, Scunthorpe Steelworks, which is good. But guess what they're going to call it? British Steel. Mm. Yeah. So why didn't we just have British Steel in the first place? But Tata is a fantastic name, isn't it, for a company that's shutting down our manufacturing industry. Otherwise known as thank you and goodbye.
What do you think of the shoes thing? Is that just is that real? Is that a red herring thing? Is there something? If we sign up to these things, is there something that we can use in this argument?
Who is paying £4.80 for shoes? What? That's ridiculous.
No, that was more than you. Yes. You'd have to pay more.
It would add £4.80 on
top. And that's £2.40 per shoe.
Yeah. I wanted
to know where those shoes came from.
I was in the United States a couple of weeks ago, and they had a big advert which said, shoes, buy one, get one free. I thought that was the whole idea.
It wouldn't affect me, because I buy... the only benefit of being essentially an optical illusion, as I am, is I buy children's shoes. Uh-huh. So I can buy... which don't have VAT and are often cheaper, so I just buy kids' shoes. I mean, it can be embarrassing when they light up and stuff, but...
But then they appeal to the people who made them, don't they? But cheap shoes is why Northampton's collapsed, because it used to be the centre of the world's cobbling, and now it's finished because of cheap shoe imports.
Well, it's still there, but none of them are... There's only one British-owned cobbler in Northampton.
Who owns the other ones?
How do you know these
Tatars?
Things?
Because I... Well, I always, you know...
I have my shoes made by a man in Northampton.
No, I mean, I just make a point of chatting to shoe salesmen. I did a play in Northampton a few years ago, and I went to... there's lots of shoe shops there, so I thought, well, I'll go to one of the shoe shops. I went to Trickers, which is the last independent one, and I was, you know, you talk to people, you know, you just talk about the area you want. I was staying there for, like, 2 months, and at some point, eventually, the conversation came around to shoes.
I bought some red Leicester cheese in Leicester, and I looked at the packet, and it said, made in the Republic of Ireland.
Is nothing sacred. Ontologically, these are the ongoing attempts to rescue Tata's steel plants amid the crisis in the British steel industry. Part of the problem is that the UK has consistently voted against higher trade tariffs in Europe, but Business Secretary Sajid Javid said that by doing so, he had managed to lower the price of the nation's shoes. It must be comforting to the steel workers to know that while they may lose their jobs, there are nimble-fingered five-year-olds stitching trainers in Thailand whose miserable future is utterly assured. The extra cost of shoes for a British household would have been £4.80, unless you wanted steel toe caps, in which case you have to pay an extra pound, but also then own a steel factory in Scunthorpe. 2 points to Danny. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Susan have 4, but so too do Cariad and Danny. We start round two with a headline from E! Online.
Cameron Diaz encourages women to keep their pubic hair in her new book.
Thank you to Graham Forbes for sending us that. And how wonderful that we've somehow achieved crossover with E! Online. Whatever that may be. Jeremy, have a listen to this.
It's got nothing to do with your four-sprung dirge technique, you know. And it's not about you joggers who go round and round and round.
Jeremy, who's been told not to jog on?
Well, Radio 4 is certainly up to speed, because when I started doing this programme, the music played would have been Keep On Running, and now it's the 1995 Blur hit, Parklife. OK, there's these people who are called Park Run UK, Run Park dot Leave. and basically they get a load of people to go running at the same time. But the trouble is that what they're doing is they're making the park horrible for normal people who want to go for work. They're messing up all the grass and they're putting pressure on the pavement, which is my excuse for not jogging, is that it ruins the nation's paving stones. And all they said was, could we have a few quid a year upkeep from parkrun.leaveuk.eu, which is an organisation, and they said, well, football clubs have to pay £6 every 5 years, so you should pay something. But the nation's joggers have gone ballistic and descended on this council, and everyone's furious, and all sorts of people like Paula Radcliffe have said, God, if people can't en masse defecate by the roadside, what the hell is happening to this country? And people have pointed out that obesity is a huge crisis and we should all be doing more exercise.
They're saying that there is jogger-based erosion is the problem. Is that how real a problem do we think jogger-based erosion is? Do you think... I mean, has anyone here been for a run in North Norfolk? Are you the reason that the whole place is falling into the sea?
I've not done a park run, but I have I've recently started to do some training, and I have a personal trainer, and there's a fashion for using the parks, the outdoors. So I go to a boot camp at 6 o'clock in the morning in a Glasgow park, right. And we run around the park. And the first time I did it, it was pitch black. In a Glasgow park at 6 in the morning. It was thrilling. And the man said, my personal trainer said, to pick up that tyre and carry that tyre around the park. For a normal person, you can pick up a tyre. I'm
too
short.
More use if you were picking up hypodermic needles and used condoms, to be honest. You can combine two tasks with one.
But I had to pick up the tyre and hold it over my hand like it was a handbag. So I was wandering in a park as if I was in a fashionable London cafe. And it was good fun because you used the park for something other than, you know, just wandering around the park.
You know, you said this was 6 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a dream?
No. You do it before work, so you do an hour of hard intensity training.
You don't work.
I think you'll find out too, Jeremy. I have a lot of things in my life.
Susan obviously thinks people go to London cafes carrying tyres on their arm.
No, a lady's handbag. I've seen women in magazines with them. I have a sensible rucksack. So, I mean, the argument is they're very, very popular and they are encouraging people to take more exercise because they're very popular all over the country. And if people have to start paying, a lot of people do it because they can't afford to go to gyms because gyms are quite expensive, whereas they can just go out and have a run. And if we are talking about a population which is going to be saddled with an obesity crisis, surely we should be encouraging people to do any form of exercise.
Shouldn't you be encouraging people to use the park as well? Like, why is the park there but for people to use it?
To be kept pristine for the people who like to enjoy the park the way it should be, Carriard.
In the correct way. I think what you're saying about British military fitness, and I think, I don't know, I think women like aggressive men shouting them to do exercise because it reminds us of the patriarchy. You know, that's what we face every day, is men shouting us to tell us what to do. But if we can, you know... get healthy out of it, that's something.
When we were getting a personal trainer, we had a big discussion about whether to get a man or a woman. What would we react better to? And we decided we'd react better to a man shouting at us, because it's never happened to me. And so this man shouts at us, and it's quite... I come over quite girly. Because he's like, come on, Calman, you can do better. There's no such thing as failure. And I'm like... I'm wearing tights and there's a man shouting at me.
I used to have a personal trainer, a very nice man called Imran, and he'd come and, you know, we'd go out on the streets and do sort of sprints and stuff. And there was a thing where he would sort of help me stretch, and my arms were behind my back, and he was sort of pulling my arms so they stretched. And this car screeched a hole, and these guys jumped out because they thought he was attacking me. Antibiotically, this is the news that Stoke Gifford Parish Council have decided to charge a weekly park run, £1 per runner, to cover the cost of wear and tear to the park. All this happened in Little Stoke, which used to be called Stoke until the combined activities of joggers wore away the rest of the town. Anyway, it makes no sense to run around in small circles in Gloucestershire when if you run in a straight line, you will eventually reach the county border and beyond it, freedom. 2 points to Jeremy. Carriad, have a listen to this. Thank you. Cariad, who's been accused of lifting spirits?
Well, yeah, it's difficult to say who that was because in the papers this week, Led Zeppelin, who for Radio 4 listeners are a modern rock band, have finally had their case. It's been taken to a jury that they plagiarised the song Taurus by Spirit, who the classic funeral hit Stairway to Heaven is what they're claiming. I think you just played the Taurus version. Was I, or was that, am I, have I just proved
that
the case?
Both.
That was both.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so they were touring with Spirit during the late 60s, and they would sometimes they'd play each other's tracks, and there'd be a mashup, and someone on, not even the man who wrote it, someone on behalf of his estate, because he's actually sadly passed away, is suing Led Zeppelin. And the man who wrote the Taurus song is called Randy Wolf, but he performed under the name Randy California, because clearly Wolf was not an exciting surname for him. He went, nah, you know what, Randy Wolf, that's not enough, but I tell you what will be, Randy California. So they're claiming that they stole the chord progression at the beginning. So it's the chord progression, then the break, and then another chord progression. That's the bit they're claiming is stolen, which obviously is a very famous bit of Stairway to Heaven. But I liked, Led Zeppelin claimed, those chords were so clichéd they did not deserve copyright protection. Which I thought was a damning indictment of their own musical ability, and quite harsh, because they're pretty good. But it's not even him, it's another man called Michael Skidmore, just to sound like a comedy baddie, who's after money and nothing else. He is actually suing them on behalf of Randy's estate, because apparently before he died, Randy said, I wrote that. And it's apparently also very similar to a George Harrison song as well. So you can't start suing every dead person from the 60s, can you?
There must be a lot of penniless, very old African-American blues musicians who are saying, Led Zeppelin plagiarised it. You don't say.
How legitimate a claim is it?
There was their excuse, basically, is we didn't steal it from him, we stole it from everyone.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was very convincing, but because the worst thing about it is I had to listen to that song twice in order to try to work out what I thought of it, and it was pretty bad. Essentially, if they were so clever, they would have written Stairway to Heaven themselves, but they didn't. They wrote a song that no one had ever heard, so I don't think the case falls on that.
The judge has actually said it now has to go to a jury, so now you're going to have to ask 12 random people who, I assume, you know, might not necessarily have music breakdown ability knowledge, which is the technical term.
And a jury, don't you have to get people that know nothing about the thing? So you've got to...
Never heard Stairway to Heaven. I've never been to a funeral.
I have a fairly visceral, emotional reaction to Stairway to Heaven because in my younger days, boys would learn how to play that as a courting kind of tool. So you would go down to their room at university and you'd say, oh, did you play the guitar? And they go, yeah, and they'd play just the opening part of Stairway to Heaven and then nothing else. That's all they could play.
I was always courted by accordion players who played When the Saints Go Marching In.
But when someone starts, and it's quite intense playing, like, you don't want to go, just leave it, mate, I'm really not interested. You know, I was just here because you had some wine. And,
what did you used to play to ladies to woo them?
Well, my recorder. I was single.
You're looking at me.
Well, I'm not
musically gifted.
Oh, yes, gosh.
If you hear me sing, you'll know that extraordinary rendition means torture. Yeah.
Primarily, this is the shocking news that Led Zeppelin have been accused of plagiarism over their song Stairway to Heaven, the opening chord sequence of which it is argued bears a remarkable resemblance to the song Taurus by the band Spirit. Stairway to Heaven tells the story of a woman buying a stairway to heaven, but like all popular music, it's actually about drugs, incest, and the pitfalls of inadequate financial planning.
I thought it was a way for old people to get upstairs when their knees go.
Of course, the real victim of plagiarism in all this is the creator of the original Stairway to Heaven, listener and friend of the show, the biblical patriarch Jacob, upon whose eponymous ladder both the song and the religion of Judaism are based. 2 points to carry out. Danny, who's run away as fast as their 8 legs can carry them?
Yeah, well, this is an octopus called Inky who has made an escape from the National Aquarium in
Lord
New
Inkelstein,
Zealand.
They should call him, I think.
Oh, dear. By breaking out of the tank, slithering down a 50-metre drain pipe and disappearing into the sea. So, in other words, gone offshore. So my favourite bit about this story is the quote from the person who's running the aquarium, Rob Yarrell, who said, "Octopuses are famous escape artists. I don't think he was unhappy with us." Now, I'm only a Jew from Pinner. But how did he know that? He would want to know what's happening on the outside. That's just his personality. This is Inky, and he's always been a bit of a surprise octopus. What is this? And then I said, we have another octopus, Blotchy, but Inky had the personality. I mean, it's absolutely, it's just an octopus. Get
that
real.
That was the sad part of that story. Yeah, really it was sad. Poor Blotchy. So Blotchy's there going, well, at least I'm still here. And the guy at the zoo's like, well, he's not got much of a personality. And poor wee Blotchy's like, no, with maracas behind him going, I can do it, I can do it.
He's working on an escape by making a glider out of cuttlefish.
If you're in an octopus double act and you're not the personality, what do? You just provide the legs? Like, that is really harsh.
You'd be like Mike and Bernie Winters, wouldn't you, really?
I don't know who they are.
Bernie. They were two brothers called Mike and Bernie Winters,
okay,
and when they acrimoniously fell out and separated, Mike Winters was so lacklustre that Bernie replaced him with a St. Bernard called Schnorbitz.
Schnorbitz.
Do you think Blotchy's going to get a St. Bernard?
It's just, when you read the story, it's an interesting one. Apparently, octopus can squeeze through the gap of a coin.
Not one of those giant octopuses from films.
No, not one of the ones from, like, Sinbad.
not the made-up octopuses.
No, not one of those. I feel like
I'm talking about...
to a child. No, not the ones from Sinbad, Jeremy.
You're talking about calamari, aren't you? You're not talking about...
I'm talking about the octopus, which was, like, a normal-sized... Like, if you had an octopus, you'd say that's a normal-sized octopus.
Yeah. Calamari are squid, and they're no good at escaping.
Yeah, squid aren't good, but an octopus. Like a normal-sized octopus.
The kind that can crush a submarine and it's eight
no,
tentacles.
No, not one of those ones.
Why would one of those need to escape? It can crush a submarine. Yes. Where's it escaping from?
That's a
good point, Carrie. That's what I should have said. They're not going to have one that size in a zoo if it could crush a... So a normal... Normal-sized octopus, coin-sized hole, and if you look at it in the papers, they do a whole map of his escape route, where apparently, it's conspiratorial, so the top of the tank was left ajar. In the middle of the night, Inky decided, because there was no one looking, to eat it, and then he found this tiny little thing, and he went, sod it, I'm going to go for it, and Inky went. Now, they've said he's not been stolen. I think that's a more logical explanation.
Well, that's the thing, they only suspect that he's escaped. All they know is he's disappeared.
Well, I saw that. There's no video, there's no proof. They just went into the tank and he wasn't there, so
he's
kind of goes...
Surprise octopus. Which bit of this don't you get?
Well, somebody might have sold him. One of the zookeepers might have like done something.
Could
that might
have
be
used
dodgy
one
deals.
Of his long tentacles to reach the key that was hanging on the by the sleeping jailer and pull it into the cage and undo it, and then knock the jailer out and put his clothes on and escape.
The Guardian said the escape. We called it a brazen escape. How did they know it was brazen?
They don't know. They don't even know. It's any speculation that it's escaped at all. It could be the sort of caretaker. Oh, the. That is delicious. I didn't know how the lid came off. I wanted to do that for years.
I tell you, it could be. It's going to be, if anyone's eating Inky, it's Blotchy. The bitter octopus.
So you said
it
didn't have a personality.
Yeah, exactly. Assure you, Inky. Yeah.
It is nice octopus. I've eaten it. It's a bit like those things that stop you slipping in the bath. When you get...
Have you eaten one of those as well?
Taste-wise or texture-wise?
Well, both.
I do like, it's true, you're absolutely right. The idea of a surprise octopus. Wouldn't you like to get that for Christmas? Why have you bought me an octopus? No, it's a surprise octopus.
When I was a child, I asked for a snake and I got a hamster. And that was a very upsetting surprise.
Did you use the hamster to lure a snake? They die very quickly, don't they, hamsters?
Don't even start with the story.
Oh, God. Can of worms.
Damn James Dyson, damn him.
Pedagogically, this is the cheeky tale of Inky the octopus, who has vanished from the National Aquarium in New Zealand. He apparently broke out of his tank, slithered down a 50-metre drainpipe and disappeared into the sea. What I can't understand is an octopus runs across the floor of an aquarium and the world is captivated. A rat runs across the floor of my pop-up artisanal bakery and I'm told I have to go on a course. Bloody Brussels. It just goes to show how important it is to take care of octopuses responsibly. And remember, summer's on its way and they do die in hot cars.
I can empathise. I don't think I'd want to be looked at by the paying public if I had a beak between my legs and an anus on my face.
What am I talking about? I'd love it.
2 points to Danny. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share?
This was sent in by Dan Stockwell, and it's from the Bacon Garth Children's Centre in Cottingham, and it's a notice. Finding my feet session will not be running during the Easter holiday.
Susan.
This was heard on You and Yours by Graham Molt, where Lord Grade was discussing his new role as fundraising regulator. I realised that it is a job that needs doing very badly, so I decided to do it.
Carrie-Anne.
This is a cutting from The Guardian, which was sent in by lots of people. A former German intelligence employee has said he started spying for the US and Russia because he felt underappreciated and not sufficiently challenged in his job. No one trusted me with anything, he said.
Danny.
From the Nairobi Star and sent in by Tanya Chopra. A pilot caught on camera attacking a policewoman has been charged with assault and creating disturbance. The prosecution objected to the pilot's release on bail, saying he's a flight risk.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Carrie-Anne and Danny have 8, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Susan with 9. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Royal Borough Observer, sent in by Andy Sondon.
Are you a man aged over 40? Windsor Lions Club is offering free prostate cancer checks with the help of a local estate agent.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz for Jeremy Hardy, Susan Kalman, Carrie Lloyd, and Danny Finkelstein. In the chair was Miles Jack, and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair's script was written by John Hunter, James Kettle, and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Sarah Campbell and Jenny Collier. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Radio comedy production.